Okay, we have two senators here with us today. Senator Ward and Senator Miller, myself, Senator Green. We also have two bills to be heard today. The first is Senate Joint Resolution 4, Senator Donnelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Joint Resolution 4 would ask the Congress would propose to Congress a United States constitutional amendment to empower the Congress to set reasonable campaign spending limits for election to federal office, the states to have the power to set reasonable limits for campaign expenditures for state office and for local office. And it's parallels identical resolutions that are before the United States Congress today. It addresses the problem that's been raised with the United States Supreme Court of decision of Buckley versus Vallejo, which said that you can't limit spending on campaigns because that's the same. The court has equated campaign spending with free speech. And there's a national movement today to give government the authority under the Constitution to limit campaigns. This is the only way to do it.
Other questions? Senator Donnelly? Well, as we were talking before, the concern that always comes up for some of us is the fear of the Constitutional Convention being called and what it tends to engender from people who become very concerned. It regularly happens, and so that's my concern. And you and I have talked that this doesn't normally happen. It doesn't get to that point. States tend to withdraw. Senator Donnelly.
Not only does it normally happen, it's never happened. Every time we've gotten close to that situation, even being close, one of two things has happened. A state has pulled back, or Congress has moved ahead on their own. So it's never happened. And during the last election, the voters of Alaska approved, in fact, mandated virtually that the state also ask for, they use this identical procedure and asking for a constitutional amendment for term limits. That was on the ballot this last election and was overwhelmingly approved by a vote of the people. And I think everybody recognizes I don't think anybody wants a constitutional convention, but if the members, and I know we're all overwhelmed with things, but what's happened is that we've had a serious change in the federal system in the United States over the last two centuries. When the U.S. Constitution was originally drafted, states had a lot of very important powers they no longer have to encourage changes on the federal level and changes to the federal Constitution. You may remember originally state legislatures chose the senators. If you wanted a U.S. constitutional amendment, your state legislatures could instruct their senators to vote that way, and if they didn't, they could withdraw them, pull them back, and send new people to Congress. We no longer have that authority. So that's an example of one of the federal checks and balances of the powers between the federal government and states that no longer exists. This is virtually the only remaining power that rests with the states to compel action by the federal government on an issue. And if we fail to use it occasionally, if we're scared to use it, then we have no remaining powers in the federal system as a state itself. And I think clearly none of us want a constitutional convention, but this is something that should be taken seriously and sends a very serious message to Congress and will spur them to action, hopefully. And I would actually be one of the very first to advocate that if we got to 25 or 30 other states, which is a very, very far away, actually also doing this, then I would suggest we pull it back, too, if we couldn't get Congress to act.
Are there further questions? The will of the committee on Senate Joint Resolution 4?
Madam Chairman, I'd like to move Senate Joint Resolution number 4 out of committee with a zero political note and also with individual recommendations, and I plan on speaking to the Judiciary Committee, next committee referral, because I have to feel more comfortable that it in fact isn't going to happen.
Okay.
So I so move.
Thank you. There being no opposition, Senate Joint Resolution 4 moves out of committee with individual recommendations.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Sorry about being late. Senator Donnelly asked me not to be here because I asked too many questions.
He did not.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Senator Mackey, for joining us. Okay, Senate Bill 54, which is the concerns the longevity bonus, and I think Allison, are you here to give us an overview and give us the information about this bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Alice Vanelgi. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Administration. Senate Bill 54 is comparable to legislation that the Governor introduced during the last legislature. It sets an income cap for eligibility for receipt of the longevity bonus payments. The income cap that is proposed would be $60,000 for a single individual and $80,000 for a married couple living together. It is the governor's feeling that while we look at trying to reduce state expenditures, we need to look first at where we can do so with the least impact. And his feeling is that the longevity bonus payments for people at those income levels is not necessary for them to be able to maintain their livelihoods here in Alaska. One of the side benefits of establishing an income cap to the longevity bonus program is that under the federal rules regarding supplemental security income, the people that qualify for those payments at present have to be held harmless from the impacts of the receipt of the longevity bonus program. So we presently pay about $2 million in general fund in the adult public assistance program as longevity bonus hold harmless money, which if we establish an income cap in state statute, we would no longer have to pay. At that point,
how much is that to?
It's approximately $2
million.
$2 million.
Okay, thank you.
So what we are proposing here would allow us to save that money, as I said, in the adult public assistance program. We're estimating, based on economic projections of senior populations, that this would have an impact to approximately 6% of the present recipients of the longevity bonus program, and that we would be able to save in that program about $6 million a year. In the implementation of the program, the income levels are based on adjusted gross income as reported for federal tax purposes, minus longevity bonus payments themselves, so that in determining eligibility, longevity bonus payments would not count. And what we would do for somebody that exceeded the income limits would be to suspend them for a year. They would not be dropped from the program forever, so that if there was a circumstance that was like a one-time only circumstance that created an income fluctuation that caused somebody to exceed the program in any given year, if they fell back below those income limits in the succeeding year and maintained their eligibility for the program in every other respect, like residency type requirements, then they would be readmitted to the longevity bonus program at whatever dollar level they had been suspended at. I think with that overview, I'll stop and respond to questions. And I have with me two of our program people from the Division of Alaska Longevity Programs to respond to technical questions if I'm unable to.
So what if I understand this, what you want to do is take the longevity away from people that earn more than $60,000 a year, is that right?
$60,000 for a single individual, $80,000 for a married couple living together.
And is that a changing of what the original intent of the program was? It seems to me I never remembered a welfare thing or a needs thing.
Madam Chair, Senator Ward, this program has undergone many changes since its inception. As I'm sure you're aware, the original concept behind the longevity bonus program was to reward those individuals that resided in the state prior to statehood at, you know, some point in Jim, which year was the Zubel case? In 1984, as a result of a lawsuit, this program was opened up to any senior citizen who had a 1-year residency in the state, and was, and over the course of those years, the payment level itself for the longevity bonus program was also amended up. In 1994, the legislation passed that created the phase out of the longevity bonus program was implemented, and we started reducing payment level. We have now closed the program. The last applicants to the program were applicants prior to December 31st, 1996. So we are no longer accepting new applicants to this program at this time.
So if I might, then, since my aunt had missed this by 1 week, and she was born in Alaska, which is fine because it does phase out, but where in this course of the conversation, or during legislation or initiatives or court rulings, where was it decided that we were going to discard a certain group of people and have them have to present income statements and things like that?
Through the chair, Senator Ward, it hasn't been decided. It is a proposal that the governor's making that is here before you today.
But so then it's, this is strictly his policy procedure. He wants to have people become proved that they should have this then.
Through the chair, it's the governor's feeling that in terms of trying to reduce state spending, that we have to look at that state spending that has the least impact on the public. And in looking at the longevity bonus, the primary need for the longevity bonus is amongst our senior citizen population who depend on it to pay for groceries, to pay for rent. It was his feeling that people at the income levels he proposed did not require the longevity bonus payments in order to provide those kinds of to be able to continue their residency here in the state.
I'm just trying to find out why he thought of this. I mean, why would we want to take away some money away from our pioneers? I don't understand.
Through the chair, I believe that if there was plenty of money for all of the needs of the state, this would not be a proposal that the governor would put before you. If that's not a case, it's something that both the administration and the legislature has agreed that we need to be able to control our spending, and this was a way he felt he could do it with the least impact on the population affected.
On our seniors? I mean, I can think of a lot of other areas other than our seniors to do this to. This seems like attacking those that should be least attacked of anyone.
Through the chair, Senator Ward, in making this proposal, the governor did leave all other senior programs at levels that they've been funded at in the past, and this was a very conscious choice that he wanted to protect the other senior programs that he felt were going to more needy individuals.
I'll stop there. I got to admit, I'm really bewildered at this.
Yeah, I could probably shed just a little bit of light. First of all, this is part of the governor's budget plan that he submitted. That included $8 million worth of savings from going to a needs base. So he has, if this doesn't pass, he has an $8 million gaping hole in his budget plan, for one thing. The other thing was, over the last 6 years that I've, 7 years now that I've been here, we've had to take a look at, you know, those court decisions that, first of all, we can't, it is no longer a longevity bonus. Anybody that's been a resident in the state for 1 year, and my understanding is about one-third of the people that are currently receiving longevity bonus have been in the state less than 5 years. It's somewhere in that neighborhood. 20%. And so this fund was growing by $7 to $11 million a year, every year, with new people coming to Alaska and getting the longevity bonus, and that was when, I think it was 3 years ago, that we passed legislation to phase it out, and of which both of my parents missed it. I mean, there's a lot of people affected, but there was no way the state could withstand the growth of the program at $11 million additional dollars a year at a time we were having to downsize. That was one decision. Now the governor's proposing that it be anybody less than $80,000, a couple, or $60,000 a year for a single, still continue to get the longevity bonus, but the more wealthy of our citizens probably don't need it as much, and so he's able to show us an $8 million savings. That's basically what I...
Is that accurate?
One of the things that I'd like to ask is what happens in... Every time you have to offer proof, like when you do a tax statement or something, it looks like to me you would be getting into a lot of accounting, you know. I mean, and how do you prove it's not true? How do you... And then I'm concerned then, because in some areas of the state, with vast landholders, you do have people who could buy and sell all the rest of us but may not have... is it income or assets?
Madam Chair, we would look simply at income. So people that had a good deal of assets but were not realizing income from them would not be penalized. It would be reportable income, adjusted gross income as reported on your federal tax returns.
I mean, I can see some vast landholders, though, who have the potential power to earn, you know, and step right out of a problem, and it creates a little bit of an unfairness there. I mean, I wouldn't have proposed this in the first place, but if I'd been proposing it, I think I would have done some other fixes on that. I wouldn't have exempted people with vast holdings of land or, you know, multiple acreages or past the home site. Because I know on like property tax exemptions, when we get into that, that gets to be a major thing. Are we exempting someone 1,600 acre ranchette, or are we exempting their one lot tract downtown? You know, so it gets to be a major. From Senator Mackey, you had your hand up.
Oh, I was just, you know, I was just thinking it. You know, what it appears to me where the governor's coming from is that, you know, the little old lady or little old man, whichever, that is barely making it and, you know, is living on a very fixed income, a longevity bonus, I know from experience with a lot of my constituents, and I'm sure you too, that is a really critical part of their being able to survive, let alone make it. But I guess the policy question we're being asked is, should someone that's making over $80,000 a year, how dependent really are they on the $250 a month? When we can't really call it a longevity bonus program any longer. I mean, believe me, I wish that we could discriminate and have lifelong residents receive X amount, and if you haven't been in the state less than more than 10 years, you don't get anything. I mean, that would be a true longevity bonus program, but our courts don't allow us to do that. You know, I mean, when you have to cut the budget, I guess there's going to be all kinds of alternatives and proposals thrown on the table. This is certainly just one of them.
Yes, I agree. I don't think that it certainly isn't the longevity bonus that that I had anticipated back when it started. And like you, my family, a lot of them didn't get into it, and they were born here, and they're Alaska Natives, just like your family. And but as far as penalizing Alaskans that have done well from the original concept, that's ridiculous. There's no way I'd ever support taking this money away from seniors. If we have to reduce government, you know, all I need is a pen and I can show the governor where in about 15 minutes without attacking our seniors. And to penalize them for doing well in society is one that, to me, is just absolutely not a good public policy that he's trying to impose upon our seniors. And I wholeheartedly disagree with this. Absolutely, that it's bad enough that that our longevity program doesn't function the way that we intended it to, but however, it is here and it is functioning. And for those people that didn't make it, they didn't make it, and they're Alaskans. They'll stand up and take it, and that's the way it'll go. We're forced to step back in now and say, oh, by the way, we're going to make you submit a lot of tax stuff and prove you're poor in order to get what is rightfully yours. The Zobels didn't take that away, and Governor Knowles isn't going to take it away, not in this legislature.
Any other questions? Any response?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Could I just ask one more question?
Yes, sir.
Allison, have you looked at, is there any increased fiscal impact? I mean, I would assume, and the Chair alluded to it a minute ago about how do they prove what their income is. What would be the proposed requirement? Would they have to just submit a copy of their federal income tax form, which they've already got done? I mean, is that the requirement? Or what kind of fiscal impact would there be for new people to have to go through and screen these or make determinations on income levels?
Through the Chair, we're proposing no additional administrative costs. We have already operated this program on an honor system. For instance, when people go out of state, their payments are suspended while they're out of state. We just ask them to let us know when they leave, when they come back. And what we do then are cross checks against other things like permanent fund dividend eligibility to determine whether or not people are in fact still maintaining residency in the state for purposes of other programs. It would be our intent to operate this aspect of the program on a similar basis where we basically just ask people to tell us yes or no, did they report more than the given income on their last year's income tax statement, and they would be subject to audit, and if there was fraud found, then they would no longer be eligible for the program.
And that process would happen with current employees that are currently doing the auditing type activities now?
Yes, through the Chair, we have three employees that administer the longevity bonus program, so it's a very small staff as it is, but we've worked with the Office of Management and Budget's audit staff in doing audits in the past, and we would look at continuing that kind of approach.
You have another question?
No, that was all. Thank you.
Yeah, Allison, I have one more, because I don't think there's anyone here who has signed up to testify today. I had thought someone from Permanent Fund was here. No, not today. No one here is from Permanent Fund. I mean, longevity.
We've got two individuals here from the program that are here to answer
testify?
Questions.
Okay, fine. Okay. Timely or untimely, I received an inquiry today about the, again, use of the longevity bonus check and the message that was on the check to the citizens from the governor, and alluded to his proposal for his 1998 capital budget, which includes money for a senior citizens housing development program, which will provide grants for buying land, site preparation, and building materials, continuing maintenance of pioneer homes across Alaska, and completion of special care units in the Sitka and Palmer Pioneers homes for the care of residents with Alzheimer's disease and related disorders. Do not forget the deadline for filing your 1997 CSD application is Monday, March 31st. Besides of my distaste for this use of that piece of that payment, I notice he has omitted any reference to Senate Bill 54, and I wonder if he plans to do that on the next mailing.
Madam Chair, we have done some public information work in terms of getting this proposal out. We had an article that was included in the Senior Voice, I believe the December or January issue, that outlined what this proposal was and why we felt it was necessary. I am unaware of whether or not he intends to have any message about this particular legislation on the longevity bonus stub, but I can certainly pass that along to his staff as a suggestion.
Thank you. And on Saturday in this room at 10:30, we'll be having a teleconference that will go out and advertise for folks to call in and respond and give us information about their input. This, if you can't be here, Senator Mackey, I will see that you get a wrap up and the other members get a wrap up. Good, good. It'll be 10:30 here. And
on this bill?
On this bill.
So this will be a continuing.
Yes, it'll be continued to that. And that'll be basically probably a work session, because I do not know that we'll even have a quorum on that day. So, at any rate, if there's nothing else before the committee, then it stays there to the...